Welcome to the India FinTech Diaries, the only podcast focused exclusively on the Indian FinTech market. I'm Elroy.
And I'm Hemant. In each episode, we dive into the latest trends, ideas, innovations, business models, and personalities that are shaping India's FinTech landscape.
We also invite amazing guests who are innovators and industry players that are driving the change that is helping make financial services more modern, innovative, and inclusive in India. Come join us as we explore the changing landscape of FinTech in India.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of India FinTech Diaries. I'm your co-host Hemant, and this is the show where we discuss the latest trends in Indian FinTech, speak to some amazing guests from the industry, and dive deep into specific FinTech themes. Elroy, today we have a very interesting guest with us, right?
That's right, Hemant. Today we indeed are privileged to have with us one of the firms that's been at the forefront of technology innovation in Indian financial services. Starting in 1991 as Financial Software Systems, FSS has been behind many firsts in bringing technology to Indian banks and fintechs, including setting up the first ATM network in the country, issuing the first domestic network card, and many other firsts. The firm boasts of issuing 800 million plus debit cards and being Asia's largest real-time payments processor. To talk to us about the evolution of financial technology in India and the road ahead, it is my pleasure to welcome Satish Narayana Mohan, Deputy Chief Product Officer, FSS. Welcome to India FinTech Diaries, Satish.
Thank you. Thank you, Elroy. Thank you, Hemant.
Satish, can you speak a little bit more about yourself for our listeners and also talk to us about FSS journey in India and how it has mirrored the growth of financial technology in India?
Perfect. So good morning, everyone. Hemant, Elroy, thanks for this podcast with me. It's a privilege and a pleasure to joining this forum here. My name is Satish. I've been fundamentally working with technology product companies for over two decades now. It's almost 23, 24 years of my time have been spent with software product firms working on products out of India for global markets. I've been privileged to have worked in large transformation on rolling out products built in India across the globe, pretty much in every continent except Latin America and China. These are two markets I didn't have an opportunity to work directly. And fundamentally focused on financial services, been also privy to work with a large telco and a large travel organization. And what I realized was in this process, in product build, what you're essentially trying to solve is to solve for a customer problem. How exactly are you picking up a problem which would make somebody's job to be far more simpler with your product that you're going to deliver? And this has been a fascinating journey for me. And I've been with FSS now about a year and a half with a mandate to build products for global markets. And FSS, as you rightly called out, has been on the forefront of the payment domain operating out of India with a larger focus predominantly with the Indian Middle East market. And we've been doing some significant work for India. Particularly in India, what is that we've been doing? We started off way back in 1991, where we brought the first ATM switch into the country, and which was a step towards branchless banking and to help access to financial services in a very different way. When we went on to this journey of setting up the first switch in India towards branchless banking, a lot of the earlier part of the banking network, what grouped up together about 40-odd bank came together and formed the Swadhan network and partnered with us to deliver this as a shared service for them. That got the birth of FSSNet, which is fundamentally our hosted platform way back in 2001. You know, today we talk about hosted services, SaaS-based offering, but FSS has been doing this since 2001 for over 40 banks. In the last 20 years, servicing multiple payment processing capability for them. While this has been the start for us, there were many firsts that FSS has been party to. FSS started investing post 2010 into building a lot of global payment business as well. You know, today, our issuance platform, we have over 600 million cards out of the country and about over 800 million globally. And we operate in about 25 odd countries around the world, which is using a platform. With about 200 plus banks globally using the offering in that market. And I think issuance is one of our primary flagship offering, and we pretty much cover the debit, prepaid, wallets, and I think all the new opportunities that are coming up in that front with digital wallets, NCMC, you know, a lot of new things happening around that space. We also have the single largest deployment to do reconciliation, which is one of the important things that happens in the back end when you have such a high volume transaction. We do about 1 billion payment transactions reconciled on a monthly basis for, you know, which is one of our largest deployment here. A payment gateway is another large offering from our product stack, and which has been doing extremely well. And we service quite a few customers, both in India and outside India, on our payment gateway platform, where, you know, the card not present transactions are growing year on year as we see the adoption. And thanks to COVID, it's gone up, you know, really fast in that space. So FSS continues to keep building the payment processing technology stack for the financial services and the merchants alike, the two key stakeholders that we deal with. And if you look at it, our offering stacks are spread from, I talked about issuance, I talked about acquiring, the switch part, which is where our genesis of the whole journey started off with, and the reconciliation, which is more back office. Obviously, it comes with a lot of built-in security capabilities. And we have started leveraging significantly on the data and analytics, which is something that's going to make a big difference as the industry moves forwards. I will be talking about some of the new offering that we are building on that space through this webcast probably in a few more minutes on those new offerings.
Understood. Thanks for the introduction, Satish, and thanks also for this little jog down the memory lane and all the good work that FSS has done. Satish, one more thing is that when we started India FinTech Diaries, one of the key reasons we started is we wanted to inform and educate our listeners on the intricacies of FinTech, both from the business model standpoint and from the point of technology as well. And when you go to the internet, you will find enough and more information about the business model side or the business side, but there's very little information about what goes on behind when a fintech product is launched. So if you could really help us listeners understand that when a proposition like a prepaid card or wallet is brought to the market, how does the backend look like? What are the different technology pieces that have to come really together to deliver this offering to a customer?
Yeah, so if you look at it, you know, at the issuance side, using our unified issuance platform, the prepaid card gets issued. We help in the issuance of the card. And once the issuance is done, then when the transaction is happening on the merchant end, you know, we have our point of sale platform through which you could potentially swipe up. We have the merchant platform using which we acquire these merchants. So some of the merchants you could transact could be merchants operating on our merchant platform. So we have the merchant platform and the point of sale here where the interaction could happen. If it's a e-commerce kind of a transaction or where the card not present scenario is coming in, then you would have our payment gateway through which the card data is read and encrypted and sent to the acquiring bank. On the acquiring side, the acquiring bank could have our payment gateway using which they check these data, initiate the purchase authorization, and they forward the authorization query to the issuer bank through the payment switch, which could be ours, through which it goes. And once it goes to the issuance check, it could be our own unified issuance platform will validate and checks whether the received information is right, whether it's a valid card, whether it has sufficient balance. Once the PA is successful, it goes to the merchant end and integrates to the merchant end and helps the transaction to be completed. So you could pretty much see that from an issuer to an acquirer to the merchant to the gateways and the switch, we have a role to play. And our ACS, which is also on the security check, is also something that runs as part of the security checks as well. So we pretty much, in this transaction journey, pretty much from the program consumption to actual usage to the settlement of the transaction. And post-settlement, when you want to reconcile this transaction, be it 3-way, 4-way, on this particular card transaction, our recon platform comes into play to help reconcile this as well. So you have everything covered when it comes to FSS from a payment processing standpoint in this example.
Understood, Satish. So Satish, this gives us a really fair understanding of when a transaction happens, say again on a prepaid product, what does the entire process looks like, and what are the different junctures where a technology from FSS comes into play, right from the acquiring side to the issuance side. The next follow-on question that Satish I have is, for all this technology that FSS or a company like FSS provides, what are the different revenue channels or business models that exist, pricing models, so to say?
See, as an offering today, FSS offer this on-prem. Like I said, the FSS net is something that we started in 2001,
right,
for the ATM network and the switch. You know, since then, we've all these products that I talked about, be it the merchant acquiring platform or the point of sale solution or the payment gateway, all these are also offered as a hosted offering. So customers could technically come in to these platform and, you know, say that we want to start this prepaid program. Could you put the technology infrastructure and the products and help process this for us? So then we pretty much could have a business model where it could be run as by card, by volumes, by value. You know, there are various metrics on which this could be, you know, worked out for our different customers. And the other option is the different products that I touched upon in this example. The customers could have them as a licensed purchase, and you know, they could have these deployed in their data center, and where their different teams that we talked about, be it in the business and the ops side, could start using these offerings from their data center itself. So we have the license model, and as a, you know, by transactions or by the card issued, you could have different models that we have. Typically, our business finance team works on these different models on which they consume. As a software as a service subscription, so people could come and say, hey, I just want to use FSS for the reconciliation services or for dispute management. So you could even pick and choose certain services that you would want to, you know, pick up and consume. And we would be in a position to kind of quickly integrate and have those processed through our platform.
Satish, after that excellent look at one, deconstructing how a card transaction happens, then also looking at how FSS plugs in at various points in that entire transaction lifecycle, and then also understanding how typically such solutions are priced from a revenue standpoint, I think it's time to now start looking at some of the trends that are impacting the entire banking and financial technology space. So from your vantage point in steering the product vision of a firm like FSS, what are some of the top technology trends that you're seeing, Satish, at banks and fintechs?
Right. So I think payment as an industry has always been, like, if you look at it, you know, the top 10 tech trends or things that typically the consulting firms and analyst firm post, you would surprisingly see payments as one element which keeps coming every year. You would see new things like blockchain, IoT, those things keeps evolving. But payment surprisingly comes in that top 10, top 20 pickup because the way in which one needs to reimagine, or the way in which this one area gets disrupted year on year, is significantly huge. And what's been happening is, you know, the kind of India, fortunately, with initiatives driven by RBI and the central government, lot of the India stack and the lot of capabilities that the whole ecosystem is creating for greater digital adoption in payments has been a substantial foundation for everyone to kind of leverage on. So there are these big regulators and players who help establish this framework. And the huge adoption rate is also pushing us to kind of make sure the right set of tech stack and design are done to be able to handle these kind of upsurge in volumes and scale. You've seen that while in the last year or so, while we had a short dip in April, soon after lockdown, because we were, the whole economy was trying to understand what this lockdown means and how do we operate.
Yeah.
But since post lockdown, I think the volume upsurge has been tremendous. And you know, you look at any forms of digital payment, the upsurge has been significantly high. And from a technology standpoint, to be able to support those, clearly most of the product sets and offerings have looked at being moving towards cloud technology, where your ability to scale on demand becomes far more easier and relevant. So being able to build a microservice cloud native stack becomes pertinent for such upsurge of volumes, which we have seen like never before. Secondly, the ability to understand what the customer is actually trying to do. So your ability to start interpreting this huge volumes of transaction data for insights and analytics. So while the data maturity levels of organizations have been progressively improving, but the urgency to do that at a higher pace or at a faster need has grown during the COVID period. And people have started understanding what kind of patterns are people are, you know, looking at, where the upsurge and volumes are hitting, you know, what kind of necessity or what kind of use case are being applied. So customers have been influencing technology, you know, or the digital transformation acceleration for various business. So customers today have moved towards mobile-based transactions or web-based transaction. All the digital native, the Gen Z and millennials who've been comfortable with this have been, you know, have always been consuming these, and any new forms of options coming in this area, they've been they've been very seamlessly adopting those. Whereas Gen X and Gen Y have no choice but to start looking at these, and they've been, you know, the transformative lot who've been moving towards. And some of the data point that shows us also, like the number of new registration for let's say bill payments from the conventional standard bill payments list to all the newer options has surged like tremendously. So which shows people want to, you know, explore, want to try out and take out, you know, start adopting to these new options. So your ability to offer various services through omnichannel for your customers becomes pertinent. So, you know, device enablement, cloud native, and, you know, analyzing your data, your driving your data consumption and analyzing from it becomes pertinent from a business standpoint. Just to call out three areas, but there are quite a few other stuff that happens on the technology side. And more importantly, security, and when volumes and scale increases, the risk of frauds and security threats intensifies, and your ability to start building risk models and ability to, you know, group customer segments where the potential and risks are going to be much higher, and you know, kind of thwart them proactively is the other investment that the industry is focusing on.
Understood, Satish. Satish, what's the most exciting new product that's in the works for you or you've recently launched with FSS? Tell us a little about that as well.
All right. So I think there are, the example that I talked to you about, there are quite a few existing stack of products that I touched upon, issuance, acquiring. So we continue to invest on enhancing these products on those tech stack that I just talked about, you know, making them cloud native, making them more data driven, and also be able to quickly integrate seamlessly with more APIs and SDKs. So that continues on the existing stack of product as the market evolves, and make them more seamless from the adoption standpoint. On the newer front, we've been working on an omni-channel offering. What's the idea is to give more flexibility for both our end consumers who could come from the bank standpoint as a first customer to us, or the end consumer coming through the market or the merchant side of business as well. So for both ends, consumers today demand multi-channel engagement. So, you know, they want various kinds of integration. So it could be a voice commerce integration. It could be a phone, you know, it could be a mobile integration. It could be a chatbot-based integration. It could be a, you know, wearables where they want to keep a low-value transaction using NFCs. So there are different segments of customer who are defined, who are kind of demanding these kind of transaction support for the various channels. So our new offering is focused towards building multitudes of omni-channel experience for various channel engagement for our customers, both from the banking transaction standpoint or from the merchant transaction standpoint. This also comes with a certain other differentiator aspects, like it comes with a pre-integrated personal finance management, which, because it helps you today, the speed at which you're transacting as a consumer is way high. You know, you're suddenly making a transaction using UPI, you're suddenly making a transaction using your card, you're transacting online, offline, you're using your loyalty points to redemption. So sometimes you lose track of you know, the various transactions that you're doing. So the better way of servicing your customer would be to kind of give them a view in terms of what been their spend pattern, if they want to define budgets on how much they spend on different channels or different categories of spend. PFM helps them to do it. It also helps them to put work on a kind of a goal where they can build on balances to transact or save and you know, consume something bigger over a period of time, improve their saving potential. And it also, with some AI and ML capability, we also give some options to say which are the best payment option you should do for a particular transaction. And right. we have also used a lot of social feed and other information, of course, with the customer consent will be critical in this scenarios. Then we would be able to give a more contextual experience to our customers in terms of offers and data that we could read about them, basis which we could give them the best positioning of offers and best transaction product that they could use to, you know, service that payment. So that's one on the omni-channel offering that's on the verge of getting launched. You know, we have already working with few closed user group customers internally where we are piloting some of those use cases. The second one we are working on is a data platform. We are, you know, eventually getting to a decisioning platform in that space. But the idea is to help organization to improve their data maturity. Most often, there is a huge spike of data thanks to different channels of interaction for the customers. But your ability to get insights about this huge huge set of data and make something meaningful and contextual to a customer is a big challenge. And hence, your ability to break the system of record into long-term, so medium-term, and short-term data set and consume this data in a manner that you could, you know, keep the short-term data typically gets closer to the processing area, like the edge computing kind of needs. The medium-term is where you already have pre-processed in information, like I know what Elroy, where, which neighborhood he belongs to,
yep.
And, you know, what would be his pattern. So I already have, and I know that, you know, the risk profile of Elroy is much lower. So the moment, even if I get some transaction and there are certain pre-approval that I need to go, I could go ahead and do it because the risk, I've already risk profiled you. But in certain segment, depending on the location, the IP and the device from where those transactions are coming, we would know there is a potential high risk of this transaction going going wrong. So these are data that gets pre-processed, kept in your medium term. And long term, typically, we want to do a lot of descriptive and diagnostic analysis on this information. What happened, why it happened, can be analyzed there, basis which you could start doing some predictive preparation for certain business upsurge or certain business needs in certain markets. You know, so that's where we are leveraging our data platform, which is something that we have built with huge amount of big data processing capabilities and a lot of algorithms designed to handle customer churn, building propensity models, and you know, also giving recommendation and ideas to our customers based on various data that we consume. So these two are one. The third one that we are working on is a platform mostly on the financial inclusion space, where, you know, today a lot of initiatives have happened since Pradhan Mantri Jan Dhan Yojana, and more accounts have been opened in the rural segment. But the customers today, beyond the account, beyond the savings accounts, they not have other savings products. So how do we give them access to better access to credit? How do you design products which are very different to these markets? Because I might take a loan as a farmer in a particular rural market, but then I would want to make the payment of those loan not as a monthly payment, but whenever I do my harvest, and that can happen 3 times a year. So can you design a product which could be linked to that, and basis that, how do you you know, how do you process that? And today there are enough and more customers who are credit worthy, but our system do not have that credit rating of a lot of our customers or a lot of people in the Indian market. So, but your ability using algorithms to find the credit worthiness of these people and give them access to credit who are credit worthy, right? And they, you know, they just need capital to do their business, but access to capital is a bigger challenge for them. And how can we give them, let's say, micro insurance or micro investment plans? Because, you know, beyond physical asset that they hold, as in land or livestock or maybe some small amount of gold, they don't invest on other aspects. So how do you educate them to do this? And these are done better through the business correspondent and kiosk And the whole idea of the platform is to connect the supply and demand where there are more and more fintechs who are operating very niche spaces, offering these products. But how do you give them access to very specific customers who are operating in different pockets? So we are essentially using our open banking framework and the various APIs that we have built. We are trying to solve this for savings, credit, insurance, and investment side of product offering, which we have been privy to doing from the financial inclusion offerings that we have been building over the years. So these are some examples of work that we are doing, Elroy, and we continue to keep trying out. There are many ideas that we keep coming up on a monthly hackathon. And as I said, sometimes even 10 out of 10 ideas get dropped. And one of the important things as a product manager is your ability to junk stuff which you know is not going forward, but then don't stop experimenting and don't stop trying new things. And that's the belief on which we continue to work in our product organization.
I think it looks like very exciting days ahead for you, Satish, at FSS. And a lot of what you said actually resonates pretty well with what I've seen and my own personal experience. That also brings me to the next question that I had, right? So one of the things that technology also does, while it makes life simpler, makes products more accessible, it also tends to bring a lot of disruption in the industry. And from what I've seen over the last couple of 2 or 3 years, right, a few trends kind of stood out to me personally. So one of the trends is a little bit long-term focused, while the other one is actually happening as we speak right now. So I'll speak about the second one first, which is more rooted in the present, and then touch on the long-term one. For the first one, which is more rooted in the present, if you look at a lot of the neobanks that are coming to market today, right, a lot of them have opted to build their own technology instead of tying up with a technology service provider like FSS. They've actually opted to build out the entire technology stack. And a good example of this is Nubank in Brazil. That's one of the fastest growing neobanks in the world, with probably the highest valuation as well. Their entire stack has been built in-house, which is, I think, uses some 3,600 plus microservices, a fairly complex architecture. But one of the reasons why they opted to do this in-house is the fact that they found that if they went out in the market to build what they had in mind, it would be very difficult for them to stitch together such a solution. So one is, this is increasing trend of more tech-savvy new firms that are coming up in this space that are opting to not go the traditional route and tie up with technology service providers and get solutions to market. So that's one force that I'm seeing. A second force is more centered around the current focus on blockchain, and more specifically around distributed finance and central bank digital currencies, CBDCs as they're called, right? So one of the things with CBDCs and distributed finances, as this at some point, maybe in the next 10 years or so, gets some amount of acceptance in the world, they're going to effectively do away with the need for any transaction processing, settling, reconciliation, or even ledger management. So which means a lot of the pieces of technology that are today driving innovation for us to firms like FSS will simply cease to be viable pieces to get to market at that point of time. So one, I had two questions on this. One, do you think such technology changes actually have the power to disrupt your industry completely within the next 5 to 10 years? And two is a bit more fundamental and strategic. How is FSS preparing for such changes?
Very interesting question. I'll give it my best shot on this with what I've been reading and learning on this. On the first part, which you talked about, most of the new banks that are looking at. See, the existing traditional banks have, over the period of time, have scaled tremendously, right? And, if you look at it, you take the top 10 banks in India, or let's say the top 100 banks globally, they are, and if you call them, let's say the tier one banks, they typically are in the range of anywhere between, 30 to 100 plus years, right? And in existence. And they are servicing a few hundred million customers in the markets that they operate. And the number of applications which runs within their organization could be anywhere between 3,000 to 5,000 tech applications. So they are very complex organization who have evolved over so many years for various changes that has gone through. And when they look at a digital transformation kind of a journey, because that's like the pandemic and other stuff. I mean, digital transformation have started happening in the last 20 years with digitization of data, 20, 25 years ago, and then where Ledger started moving into data entry, and then after digital, we went into the actual, after digitalization happened, which is like picking a process part of it, a business process part of it, and take that business process and look at automating it. So that could be a small application which helps automate it because there are data below it have already been digitized. And the third one is where we were looking at the digital transformation. So where the whole experience from a single user journey is seamlessly addressed from end to end. And when you look at digital transformation, Elroy, it typically has two aspects to it. It's not just the customer-focused aspect of it. It's not just the customer engagement aspect of it, which is very important because the customer should see, wants to do a payment within with a snap of a finger, if it's a short payment or a small value payment, or if they want to open an account or a demat account, they need it to get done within a few minutes. Access to a prepaid virtual card should be in minutes. You know, those are, you know, experience that matters to customer because they don't, people don't have the patience to wait. And, the market, thanks to the likes of Fang, they kind of set the benchmark pretty high in terms of meeting customer demands. And they don't care whether you're a bank or anybody else. They expect the same level of performance servicing which the Fangs have deployed today. So one side, the banks and entities have been building on the engagement aspect of it, getting omni-channel, multi-channel engagement, seamless experience. But then what happens is, let's say, if the experience is beautiful, I'm able to traverse through my app, few clicks, talk to a bot, and then complete few aspects. But then the moment the transaction comes further down in the user journey, then for a traditional large player banks, there could be multitudes of middle office and back office application. Now, have they evolved in a way that they could respond at the speed and speed to make that experience great for the customer? Sometimes you do great stuff and you have some great interaction with the bot, but at some point the bot will say one of our call center agent will call you in the next 2 hours. This is your ticket number. So the experience breaks there, right? And that's fundamentally because the employee experience side for a digital transformation is work in progress, right? And that's the reason some of these experience break, and it's a challenge. And what the large players are trying to do is either they go and launch a completely, transforming the employee side of experience, the middle and back office, to give the same level of experience end to end for a journey is fairly complicated for a large transfer. And of course, they are picking up journey by journey and they're solving it, right? Like the examples of, what you see in BBVA, Wells Fargo, or Capital One are some great examples to look at the way in which they've been, solving these user journey to give a great experience. But at the same time, the faster way to do it is, the number of application you need to deal with and the number of people, process, applications are way too many for you to, transform to be able to launch this very quickly. The other option is to go and launch a completely new digital-only bank where you start launching product and services one by one, and each of these services are in a completely new tech stack. And neobanks are pretty much picking up this trend directly, right? So they don't have the baggage. They know what business, what the product offering they want to get to. And sometimes the journey is so clear for them, the user journey that they're going to solve. So the better way to do them is to build them by themselves because it's a tech first kind of stuff, right? So if you look at, you took an example in Brazil, if you look at another large neobank like the Revolut, they have built an entire tech stack from open source, right? So, and that gives them the level of leverage and flexibility that they want to do in scale. But of course, while those transformations are happening, there are certain pockets even the neobank, as they evolve beyond 1, 2, 3 journeys that they're solving, they would, as they get into scale, multi-country, multi-products, then they would start looking at, once they have a reasonable amount of customer base, they will start looking at experts playing in those space. And that's when, technology service provider like players like us will have a play to play with them, and they'll see, okay, for the acquiring stack, let me not go and try to reinvent, let me not try to build it. Why don't I look at a best of breed acquiring solution or issuing platform from somebody like FSS, right? And so their ability to give that experience on journey and wise is something that they saw initially, but as they scale, they will start looking at tech partners like us who focus on, enriching that for them strongly in that area that we operate. And the traditional bank, like I talked about, you know, we continue to work with them and we continue to work on those transformation. And the faster the middle and back office, the product stack that we keep enhancing will help them strengthen their middle and back office right. with new age tech stack. And that's how we look at changing them. So I was trying to tell what's happening in your tech first initiative in a new bank kind of a context and how solution like a company like ours can play a part in that over as they progress and evolve. And also how the existing large traditional players who still hold a huge amount of the market share, about, I would say probably even 90%+ of the market share still is held by them globally. And, you know, as they transform, you know, we would continue to transform with them and we help them accelerate their transformation on the employee side of the experience part and thereby making those customer experience great in specific journeys that we operate on. That's probably the my take on the first part of your question, Elroy. On the second part, you know, it's a very complex space. I'll try to give some level of my minimal understanding on this. You know, it keeps evolving. The recent trend, of course, is the which you talked about, you know, the decentralized finance. You know, as this evolves, this fundamentally is the, I would say, the probably the built on the past frameworks that have come in this space. Be it the started off with Bitcoin, then came with Ethereum, then those the coins that start happening in the last couple of years for various initiative, and DeFi is something that's been built on top of this layer, right? And fundamentally focusing on being a protocol which is permissionless and transparent, and they are trying to solve. You know, this will bring a lot of capabilities in the areas of business problems that could get solved. In multiple areas like in lending or wealth or also on peer-to-peer transfers. There are many use cases on which this could potentially get applied. But I think still very early stages, you know, there are challenges for mainstream adoption. You know, today for you to get onto these, you know, our fiat money that we have today, be it INR, dollar, euro, you know, the moving them into crypto economy still has a lot of friction. Regulation is has to be very clear and strong on these aspects. You know, certain mature markets have adopted to it. The scale at which these are getting adopted is also restricting. So like we saw Ethereum going through a certain level of burden as the scale volume started hitting them. So there are some work happening to help improve the scale. The adoption will improve when the ability to scale, you know, reducing friction on the onboarding part and better regulatory aspects coming in different markets is something that I feel will help the adoption on distributed technologies getting coming into mainstream. But there are enough and more use cases. While there were a lot of skeptics on both the Ethereum and earlier on Bitcoin, but you know, the transactions are significant over the years, and so people have started adopting to it with whatever constraint they have. But it's about how this goes into scale. So I'm still reading, learning, understanding what's happening on it. I'm not an expert on this space, Elroy, but that's my limited understanding of it and what I see happening in this space.
Understood, Satish. Thanks for that excellent discussion, Satish. Satish, in case our listeners wanted to know more about FSS or want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it?
I think our website has quite a lot of information. You could reach us through LinkedIn. We have our FSS Copcom. We are very active on LinkedIn. People can start following FSS on LinkedIn. You could also reach out to me, people like Shika on LinkedIn, and various leaders from FSS are on various social media, Twitter and LinkedIn. You could connect to us. And of course, through our website, you have direct access. If you want to really get into certain deep dive on certain areas, you could directly reach us through our website or drop in a note to get connected to us. And we are more than happy to, you know, work with or share some of the learnings and insights that we have in this space.
Great, Satish. So we'll include those details in our show notes. Thanks a lot, Satish, for taking out time and speaking with us today.
Pleasure is mine, Elroy. Thanks for this. And I think some really good, interesting discussion points. I hope I was able to give some useful information for the listeners, and I hope the listeners will enjoy listening to what you guys do. You guys are doing a great stuff in your India FinTech Diaries, and please continue to do so. And I'll continue to listen in and follow all the good work you guys are doing. And thanks for this opportunity, Elroy, Hemant.
Thanks, Satish. So that's it from India FinTech Diaries for the week. Do keep an eye out on our website, indiafintechdiaries.com, for exclusive companion content on topics discussed on the show. And until next time, stay safe.